Welcome to Smutty Scriptures, the podcast where three best friends gather together to explore the holy text of fantasy romance novels. I'm Head Priest Blue Cromwell, and I am joined by my sisters in sin, Cuttlefish and Purple Space Cat, to tell you all about our thoughts on this episode's sacred text. We are rereading the second book in the ACOTAR series, this one being A Court of Mist and Fury. And we have a lot of thoughts. We have completed the book. Again, of course, this is a reread. And wow, oh wow. I love coming home to Reese.
Oof. Yeah.
It's just a special feeling.
He's my bat boy.
Yeah. I have a strong feeling Azriel will be my bat boy. But I love Reese.
No.
I know. Me, of all people, liking Azriel? Who would not?
That's a lie.
But it is nice. I feel like I actually forgot. I didn't forget any elements of the story as I was rereading it, but I forgot how much was in this book specifically. I think this might be my favorite of, until we start to get to A Court of Silver Flames. I think that might hold my number one spot. I don't know. A Court of Mist and Fury is really good. So I'm glad we're doing the reread so I can like almost get, now that with new eyes, kind of go through and have that ranking, I guess, internally. But damn. Mm. And then ending on the transformation. Oh, God, this book just has it all. Chapter 54, chapter 55, bro.
Mm. Yeah. I still remember the first time going through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, bro? Mm-hmm. When I got to chapter 55, I remember laying on my living room floor crying because I was so emotionally invested in the story. And then chapter 55 just obliterated me. I was just lost.
It's such a universally understood chapter now. Like if you just say any ACOTAR fan, you mention chapter 55, they know what, they don't have to specify a book. They fucking know what you're talking about.
You know exactly what happens. Yeah.
Purple, did you end up doing the audiobook version of this again?
I did, yep. And I can tell you one gigantic thing that made me so very sad. And you're also going to be super sad about it, but Azriel's voice is the human equivalent of
Wonder Bread?
Spoiled mayonnaise.
Ugh.
Spoiled mayonnaise?
Spoiled mayonnaise. It's like, I mean, it is just very plain and white, but like also, no. It's like listening to customer service.
Mm. So you can't hear the... Be careful how you speak of my high lady. Like,
no,
moment.
Yeah. I have no idea how that's happening.
Okay. Good. Azriel's one line, the whole series.
Sometimes whenever I was listening to him talk, because it's not often, so it'll just come out of nowhere. And then I'm just like, hold on, did I accidentally call somebody? Like, what is this? And like, no, that was the book. I'm like, hold on. Who was that? Like, it immediately, like, takes me out. And I'm like, whoa, no. What the? Oh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. It's Az. Thanks. Oh, it's so
I hate that so much for me.
He sounds like a boring dude. Like, even more boring than Tamlin.
If you can get a voice more boring than what I imagine Tamlin's is, like, that's pretty impressive, honestly.
Yeah.
What about the sound effects? I know you were not always a fan of some of those in the first book.
Yeah, because now we've got Feyre winnowing. So you've got the weird woo sound whenever she does it.
Okay, love that. One more time.
Thank you. <Woo-woo>.
Nice.
It does kind of fade the shock of it. It didn't hurt my brain as much this book. So I don't know if that's my brain is becoming numb to the weird noise or it was less obtrusive, but I did not go Doctor Who in my brain with hearing the woo-woo. I did not think anybody was being beamed up.
Sure. Okay.
Scotty, not in the book.
Okay. So it sounds like it was a little bit better, though. I mean, disappointed in the Azriel performance. Hate to see it, unfortunately, but
the surreal sounds cool as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Do they like echo the voices and like the male and yeah. female? Oh man, that's good.
They layer them and they echo. Yeah, it's cool.
Because that would be actually really exciting. About the cereal, this is a completely random point. I just wanted to bring this up because I saw it online recently. Because people were talking about like the cloak and like stuff like that. And I guess there's like a fan theory that Lady Qualtaine is like somehow related to the cereal, and the cloak thing is like a tie in between them due to the, you know, the cloak that Aelin like gave her and whatnot and their obsession. And like, I don't know. It's just a weird and interesting fan theory. I mean, I love the cereal.
I read slash watched that on TikTok the other day. And I thought that was really interesting. I don't know. I never got that. I always liked the idea of the cereal being otherworldly. And I don't just mean like otherworldly, you know, walking between worlds. I mean like
fantasy.
Other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Made it feel more wild and untamed.
Sure.
And I really liked that. You don't have a whole lot of them in the books. I mean, they mention them everywhere. But they don't, like, you know, see them or, like, talk to them or whatever. So whenever you do have that interaction with the other, it's, I don't know, super interesting. And I really liked having the cereal be an other, but they're not good, but they're not bad. And then we find out they're a dreamer, and then you cry. And it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Don't take that away from me, y'all.
That's fair. Like, I guess I think Lady Qualtaine kind of becomes other in a way. Like, I wouldn't be mad if Sir NJ Masks, like, explained it away. I'd be like, okay, slay. Go off, queen.
But I think, like, she would have to be so changed. Like, her humanity would have to be, like broke.
Yeah.
Forever. Mm-hmm. In order for her to change so drastically to turn into one of the cereal.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that is one other thing, though, is that the cereal are multiple. It's not just one.
Yeah.
So does that mean there's more than one Qualtaine?
I don't know. I mean, I almost like the idea because it's a male and female like voice or voices, like having it be a fused elements of people collected over time.
Like a legion kind of thing.
Could be cool. I wouldn't be mad about that.
I love the cereal. That's got to be one of my favorite characters.
Of this book particular or just like in general?
In general, in the whole series.
Yeah.
I love the cereal. Favorite. The turn with, you know, their whole storyline from start to finish was just beautiful. Mm. And it was unexpected. You know, I never.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I turned around, it was never something I thought was going to happen. Like some of the tropes, you know, you're like, oh, there's only going to be one bed. That tower.
Oh, hell yeah, Sarah. Hell yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, that's got to be one of my favorite tropes ever. But same. It's also nice to not expect what's going to happen, which with such an iconic character.
Mm-hmm. I never really, I mean, I've always liked the cereal as a character, but I never really, I don't think I like bonded with him. It. In that way, like, I think the story is definitely served with it being a part of it. And the whole conversation, and the most iconic conversation between those two is like, if you want to speed your mate's healing, and Feyre goes, oh, what do you mean by that? Hold on.
I'm sorry, my way.
Wait, you didn't say which High Lord? What do you mean by that? That's such a interesting moment and such a way to like reveal that information to her, because there's so many points in the book where you can see this formation of their mating bond and these tethers between them, or Rhys's jealousy obviously, and all these things. And like, Feyre's so human, she has a human heart and an immortal body, so she didn't know what the fuck is happening. So it's such a good way to convey information to Feyre that's like, hey, you're made
by the way.
Oh, you didn't know?
You probably didn't read the manual, but you got the free upgrade. It's on a trial. You have to accept it.
You're going to need to heat up some soup, babe. Of course. Wild. Is that okay?
You got your paintbrushes ready.
Honestly. Dude, okay. Well, as far as favorite parts, I did want to ask you guys a specific question, though I will say, low-key, my favorite part is more walking into the cabin after Feyre's painted and done all these things. And she goes, wow, you've been busy. Like, I will never think it's not funny to just, like, imagine Feyre as, like, a bad painter. Or, like, this is, like, this family heirloom cabin, like, all this. And, like, Mora's like, oh, nice. Like, I fucking love that. Obviously, we know Feyre is a good painter. She does her shit. We see her teaching classes. We see these effect that these paintings have on people. I get it. I get it, Sarah. But, bro, if I go to my, like, family cabin, my hypothetical family cabin, and... my not girlfriend, my situationship is in there painting the walls. Like, what do you mean? Who told you to do that?
For me, it's what she paints that's fucking weird. Like,
right.
Of all the things, eyeballs?
Right.
Eyes. Like, why? Hmm. Why eyes? It's very, like, middle school sketch on, like, your test or whatever,
yes.
You know?
Yes. Oh, that hurts. It is. Feyre's the type in the,
like
lining.
A random eye.
Yes. The eye and the flowers and the that's
she
what she did on the fucking dresser.
Superman S thing.
Yes,
oh yeah, she does.
The S's.
She definitely does. Hell yeah, she's spelling Spring Court with that fucking S, bro. 100%.
Right.
Oh my god. I mean, that's like a minor favorite moment for me. I actually wanted to ask because I felt, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but chapter 54 and chapter 55 are kind of like the iconic moments of this book. Now, obviously, that doesn't have to be your favorite. But I was actually going to ask, of those two chapters, which you prefer at least, like chapter 54 or chapter 55, in a world you had to pick one or the other? Because I'm a chapter 54 girly.
Remind me again of which one was which?
Chapter 54 was Feyre being like, tell me everything. And then Rhys is like, all these things.
Yeah, I was sad.
All the romanticism.
55 is the sex, right?
Yes.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
Think 54.
Mm-hmm.
I was crying.
I'm going to say 55, but let me tell you why. Ignore for a moment.
Okay.
All of the emotions.
Hard to do, but fine.
The sex.
Okay.
And the sex? Oh, God.
And the sex. Ignore the sex and ignore the emotion.
Not sure what's left, but that's okay.
When they cleared everything off the table, they made a huge fucking mess. So they not only have to clean up the table and the floor, you know, and each other. But in 55, it's really just the bed. Mm. And it kind of like just gets clean. So like there's less work to do. They're both sticky. And okay. I hate that. I can't do sticky.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like it's less work to clean up the paint from the bed sheets because it just did it itself rather than having to clean up the paint and the food and all of the and two surfaces. And I mean, plus there's got to be spillage. It's going to be everywhere. It's not just from table to floor. It's all the way through. And then there's splatter.
When
so
I say
you're at the cabinets.
The window,
the wall.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Interesting.
I'm just saying there's many extra surfaces you're going to have to touch down. And I don't think that they were probably prepared for that. How many Lysol wipes do they have? Do they even have Lysol wipes?
They have magic.
I love me some sex scenes. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's pretty well known at this point.
Smutty scriptures? Us enjoying sex scenes?
Yeah.
Wow.
I wasn't super into a sex scene in particular. Like, I like the idea of it being like the paint was everywhere. And like, that was kind of like
artsy.
Okay, spur of the moment.
I like it.
No.
But, you know, the rest of it was just like, okay, that's yay. Okay. But then you get to some of the other books, and then that is like, okay.
So you're more of a Cassian type. Mm. Okay. Which is fair.
I need a Cassian in the sheets, but a Rhys in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Huh? I can respect
That's
that.
Absolutely. As long as they don't sound like Azrael, I think we're good.
That's such a shame, too, because I want Azrael's like, I'm holding out for him in my heart, dude. I love him.
If Asriel isn't a kinky boy, we really missed the mark on that one.
He has to be. He has to be. There's no way. I refuse to read it. Bro, please.
Well, the kinkiest he sounds like he ever gets is telling you that the nails are on aisle 7.
I hate it. I just imagine the, hi, how are you? Like, fucking, dude. I'm refusing to accept that information as reality, so I will be politely declining until further notice.
I'll send you over the audiobook file.
Goofy. I do feel the same, though.
Take out of time.
Do you think it's more of an evolution of Sarah's, like, writing that you liked the Cassian and Nesta, like, sex scenes versus the recent Farrah thing? Or you think it's, like, who they are as, like, a couple and, like, how they show up in, like, that scene?
Do you know what I think it is? I don't know what this says about me as a person, but I don't like it when characters make love. I like it when they fuck. So in this particular section of the book, it's very much fueled by their emotions. And I'm like, aw, that's nice.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I understand right. that too. That makes sense.
That's why I like Conning Adeline so much, I think.
Sure. Dark romance in general, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And like Saint and all those that I'm just like.
okay.
I thought it was called Priest.
But yeah, you're right. But it's Saint just thinking with a particular brain and not being one.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I don't want to live in a world where chapter 55 didn't exist.
Correct.
But yeah, it's definitely more of like a romantic and this, and I'm taking my time doing X, Y, Z and this, and let's go to the shower, which would be very beautiful and wonderful in real life. But yeah, in books,
water's not a lubricant.
I do prefer a little bit more of the, well, maybe even more like the fourth wing kind of style. They're breaking shit. Things are happening. Or Aelin and Rowan on the beach and they're like gods and they're fucking and they're, oh my God, they're changing the sand. Oh, sand. Things are happening.
Sand.
Yeah. No, it's fun.
I want passion. I don't want like, I don't know, look at me in my eye. I love you. Like, oh, that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yay.
They correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they come back to the cabin in a later book and have sex?
I don't think they have time, right? Because they're getting into wartime pretty soon, and three.
Was it whenever the boys were having their snowball fight? Was it around then?
That might be
because the
more
snowball
right.
fight was at the cabin. Did they have sex at that one?
I didn't think she was there for that.
I don't fucking know. I remember a sex scene where they also, while they're having sex, have sex in their brains. And I remember that was like my favorite one.
I don't remember that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She's like, can you have sex with me in here? And he's like, oh, can I? And then whenever I was reading it, I was like, can you please?
Really? I don't remember this at all. Know. Like he's like putting images in her brain or something?
I don't know.
Because that was fourth wing.
I slept since then.
I mean, maybe we'll find it later on. But yeah.
When she was against the wall. When he fucked her against the wall. And then she's like, yay, also brain sex? And he's like, fuck yeah, brain sex. And she's like, this is the best sex and brain sex I've ever had in my life.
Sarah, I'm like going through the book. Sarah, where is that?
How show me Google it. That? Did Farrah have brain sex? Like, it's not something you can Google.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that would be searchable. I implore you to try.
Literally, just as we were having this part of the conversation, I'm listening to music in the background, and sometimes I fuck you in my head is the song that's playing right now.
See,
you were talking about this, so
boom, it's perfect. Right there.
Wow, huh?
I got lo-fi, and you got sometimes I fuck you. Are you okay? We need to check in on Cuddle.
Those are just the vibes sometimes of the podcast. I get it. All right, well, sex scenes we've been over as far as a favorite and everything like that. Anything that surprised you guys, like, while doing the reread? Like, anything any new elements come to light? Anything look different, feel different?
I don't think anything surprised me, but just like having to go through the same roller coaster that we went through before is always fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like knowing that it's coming, like
I agree.
Knowing everything's gonna be okay. It's like my
thing.
I'm like, dude, you're so stressed right now. You're gonna be fine, bro. You are going to be fine, Feyre. I know he locked you up, girl.
I was stressed too.
We are gonna get you out, Feyre. You are gonna get out of there. Don't worry. You're gonna upgrade.
Impress.
I know you're like imprisoned, but like I need you to just fucking chill.
It's like getting gifted a subscription.
Daddy Reese is coming. Sorry. Surprise. The only thing I really caught, I guess, is like a surprise. And it was just more so I think of this character maybe like differently now. It was the first scene where Feyre, at this point, she's still in the Spring Court and she enters like Lucien's mind for the first time.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting to me because I understand more about Lucien. Obviously, going through, you go through the next book, you find out a lot about him. Mm-hmm. You find out a lot about him in general in the next few. But I thought it was interesting. I just tagged one section in particular, and because I relate to it. This is from, she's jumping into his vantage point, and Feyre says, "Thought slammed into me, images and memories, a pattern of thinking and feeling that was old and clever and sad, so endlessly sad and guilt-ridden, hopeless." And then immediately she's back in her own brain. And I was like, whoa, like the I don't know, just the...
It's a lot all at one time.
Yeah, the
depth. And a lot of subtle hints.
Yes. The depth to his, like, sadness and his guilt-ridden, like, this just living in Lucien's traumatized fucking brain, dude. Oh, my God. I can't even imagine it. And so that part was interesting because I just understand Lucien as a character a lot more. So that was fun.
My favorite part is still probably the disappearing note banter, though.
I love it.
Yes.
That's so good. It's like texting before texting existed, obviously.
But hold on. I have been seeing so many like TikToks and memes and like stuff lately where Feyre's message back Reese of what it looks like, and it looks like in kindergarten.
Oh my God.
Where it was like, I wrote him a letter. Like I wrote, you know, Tamlin a letter, and it's like Feyre's letter to Tamlin. There's just a bunch of scribbles. It's like, the fuck is this?
Dude, can you imagine though? Okay, like hear me out. I'm not gonna be this pro fucking Tamlin defender guy. But like, you know, you think this man is evil as fuck. You think he captured your future wife from your home, bro, and you know she's illiterate and she wrote you a letter. I'd be like, something's not right here. Like, something is not correct. Like, fundamentally.
Yeah, he didn't know that she could write.
No, because she had just started doing these lessons and they weren't, like, discussing, like, what she was. I mean, she was telling him, like, maybe, like, maps and, like, little, like, political things because Tamlin was kind of using her as a sponge for information, I guess. But, like, he doesn't know she can fucking read. He doesn't know she can fucking write. And then all of a sudden you're trying to tell me a person that I know can manipulate minds and that stole my fucking fiance, she wrote a letter about it? What do you mean by that? I personally, I would also be a little suspicious. I'd be like, maybe we should go back. Because I understand Feyre's intention and I think it's nice she wanted to offer some type of
closure.
Yeah, some type of closure. But can you imagine how confused that man was? Like, oh, right. Huh. Lucien's like, I don't fucking know. I fucking can't read. I don't fucking know.
Something how like are they tracking him through his magic, though? I don't remember how that was working.
I don't know if...
Was it ever actually explained?
I don't know if it's actually like fully revealed. I guess it's his, like, I don't know, his aura. I just kind of... That's how I, like, wrote it off in my mind, I guess. Like... He has, well, I guess, well, actually, maybe because Reese sometimes is described as like Vogue-like, or that he looks a lot like Maeve, or that he has like Vogue-like powers and stuff. So
don't, you're like, no, don't be like that.
I'm just saying.
No.
I'm just saying.
Bad blue. Bad.
Maybe that is more easily trackable in this universe. Maybe there is like a certain element to the Vogue that you can identify, especially if they have tools to like they have those chains, they have certain things. They would know their enemy very well, I guess I should say.
You need to go to the conspiracy corner.
Listen, I don't want evil Reese, and I don't even really think that's going to happen, because I think I've read that Sarah J. Maas has kind of based him off of her own husband. So if that is true,
listen, if
I
they go
don't want
down
Reese.
The crapper,
Reese is evil as fuck. I do think it's interesting though that their descriptions of their power are so similar, and I mean, I just feel like there is some elements to play there, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist again, but we know that Maeve falsified a mating bond between Rowan and his flower girl lady.
I miss Rowan.
I miss him too. Do we think Reese has that ability? Do you think there is a world where in that universe that for whatever reason he doesn't want Azrael to be with Elaine? And so he falsified a mating thing with fucking Lucien? But yeah, I don't know. Something about me is just like, okay, Maeve, I know, had the ability to make them think that they had other mates. Is there a reason that Reese would ever pull that card if he had that ability? Because in those bonus chapter, I don't know, Reese didn't really like the idea of Azrael and Elaine. I don't know why. I don't know.
But how would you explain the surreal then?
I'm not saying he falsified his relationship with Feyre necessarily. Because Maeve didn't falsify her own mating bond. It was between two other individuals.
Oh, I understand. Mm-hmm. You're I misunderstood. Mm-hmm. You're suggesting that Azrael and Elaine are mates in reality, but he maybe pushed it to Lucien?
I think it would be very interesting, because all of that would go down, I believe, after Reese finds out about his parental lineage. And I think it would be very interesting if he wanted to have an ally of sorts. And he knows Azrael's his guy. You know, he knows that's his bat boy. They're all three dudes. So I just think I think it's an interesting theory to play with as far as potential future implications. I wouldn't be if they did do some like evil Reese plotline. Fine, whatever. That's it.
No.
Is what it is. And if
I hate
wanted
that.
To say that in terms of like
I hate that
and Reese
so much.
It's very similar to how Tamlin said it was going to go down. I'm just saying, it's very interesting. And the fact that Maeve had that power, I don't know. It would be interesting to see some implication between that. I also know in the fandom, there's a lot of arguing about like, oh, Lucien's only Elaine's mate because the cauldron or fate or whatever thought that Azrael was dying. He had the bloodbane in his system, whatever. Just let them be fucking mates, dude. Just let them be mates. And if they end up together, great. And if they don't, fine. Or just make a why choose, Sarah. I don't ask for much.
Why choose? Oh, sorry.
That's what I would prefer. I would love that storyline 100%.
That's the only way we're gonna get a three-way.
Alternative, make them a throuple.
Oh my god.
He sounds too white though. They'd have to completely throw out the whole voice actor.
That's fine. Sarah, we have more funding. We can find someone else.
Listen, I got a $20 bill in my wallet. We can make it happen.
The whole fandom is like the
shaking the hand.
I would love that. There was one other thing that surprised me that I wanted to bring up really quick, because we've talked about in the first book the possibility of what's drawn on the cabin like that Feyre and her family are living in the beginning with the word marks. Did you catch there's another reference to them?
No.
So in page 349 in the scripture, this is when they're going on their hunt to steal the half of the book that Tarkin has. And
poor Tarkin.
R.I.P. my boy. Well, not R.I.P., but I love him.
R.I.P. that pride.
He deserves a mate.
He does. And I want it to be Gwen. She just gives me Little Mermaid vibes. Anyway, not important. Anyway, they're talking about the temple. And this is when Amarin and Feyre are alone and they're going through and they're scraping through the mud and everything. And it doesn't go over them. It just a very quick little reference, but it says every brush against the lead sent pangs of cold through me. But there, a carl in the center of the door. And she says, this must have been here for a very long time. And Amarin kind of talks about this. That I would not be surprised if, despite the imprint of the High Lord's power, Tarkin and his predecessors have never set foot here. If the blood spell to ward this place instantly transferred to them once they assumed power. Blood spell? Hmm? A ward written in blood? That's very interesting. Very interesting.
It just makes me think of Supernatural.
Sure. I'll give you that.
Written in whose blood?
I don't know. Someone very important to the record at that point. But I think it's more so I looked at that because of the word marks. They actually do talk about it a little bit. I think potentially Amren knows how to use them as well, but it's not really like understood, I guess, at this point. You'd have to really go into Throne of Glass, but there's a mark in the next chapter. This is only a few pages later, like 353. And I just thought it was interesting how it's described. So this is when they're trying to leave. The door starts closing. They're going through all this chaos of trying to steal the book. Fera goes, I reach the door, sliding the box in the wide inside of my pocket of my leather jacket, while Amren's blazing palm flattened against the door. Burning, heating the metal, swirls and whirls, radiating out as if they were a language all her own. And then the door burst open. A language all her own.
Well, is that Amren's language, like, all Amren's own? Or is that, like, in the door there were whirls and swirls and they just got lit up?
My implication there of the burning, heating the metal, the swirls and whirls radiating out through it as if they were language all her own. As if it's, like, some magical, like they're, like, a power effect. Not that they're already existing, I guess.
So it's like Amren letters, not...
It could be, but she also recognized the symbols a few pages before. So I'm like, oh, are they the same symbols? The language all of her own? Like, that's an interesting... It's an interesting thing to play with as a potential tie, because we know Throne of Glass, like, idea... Like, we don't really know exactly how the multiverses kind of exist, but we know Throne of Glass is hypothetically much before this. Maybe Amren lived through the Throne of Glass era and also... lived through this, like, that would be interesting. But I don't believe the book itself that she's trying to learn to read is the word marks. I think that's separate. So she does mention its name is Lishan Hakadosh, the holy tongue. It's no language of this world, so I assume we'll see that in a later series, maybe like Crescent City or something. So I know at least the Book of Breathings is not word marks in that regard. So
I have a thought.
Yes.
Didn't they at one point talk about whenever they were not in this book, in later, whenever we're actually figuring out what Amren is, didn't they kind of say she was an angel?
Yeah, I think she's one of the ones from Crescent City.
Why doesn't she have wings?
They could be gone. They could be, I guess. It's interesting to think about how you would get in between worlds and if that would take a physical toll from people who are not world walkers or whatever term we're going to go, like aliens.
Yeah, I had the kind of impression that she was like more like a being of light, maybe in the form of an angel, and then like was forced into a compact body in order to leave the prison. Like she created the body, like it wasn't like a vessel, but...
Yeah, so she should have made it without wings, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, then it's possible, I suppose, that she could be a witch. Because whenever in Game of Thrones, or Game of Thrones, why do I always do that shit? I always say Game of Thrones. In Throne of Glass, when the 13 did their thing, they had...
The K-Thing spy.
Yeah, I just had it, and then
the yielding.
Yes, the yielding. I was gonna say the yearning, and that's
yes.
Anyway,
they yearn for the deuces.
Choking
up the deuces.
When the 13 had performed the yielding, they burst into white light or bright light. At the end of Throne of Glass,
right?
And most of the witches, whenever that happens, I thought they were described as a dark light. But for the 13, they were a bright light or white light. I can't remember which one it was. And it's possible that that was enough energy to open doorways into the worlds. And that's, I think there's a couple of references to people who in ACOTAR could be the 13. And I guess Amren could be one of them.
That's a point.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
You could also have, who's the person who's in the Winter Court, who's friends with what's her name?
I don't know.
I don't recall the name, but I know who you're speaking of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the lady. One,
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you've got the mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
The very beginning.
I want to know more about her.
I know. What mm-hmm. a crazy cool character to just have. And you know that they knew that that was a fairy, too.
Yeah. Like, and they're just like walking around with their skin.
Yeah, I'll just totally take this.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yay. Thanks. Ugh.
Saves me the trouble.
Yeah, I would love the witch implication because Nesta also refers to herself as a witch, and they are both described with that like silvery like power, and that like that would be fun.
Hmm.
So I guess we'll see.
Well, if we're gonna talk about conspiracy theories,
mm-hmm.
I sent you guys one, and you guys did not talk to me at all. Where'd about it. So now I'm going to force you to talk to me about it.
Go ahead.
Okay. So Rhys and Feyre
mm-hmm.
were
mm-hmm.
obviously mates before when she was like superhuman time.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. he was like seeing into / through her brain hole eyes and you know, the giving her images of the sky and all that shit, which she painted. So clearly before, you know, Fae time, Feyre was human and they were mates. Mating bond existed. Yay. And then he met her. He still did not know in person that was mate. Okay.
Yeah.
He was just like, hey, this is the random lady that I'm totally connected to for some fucking reason. And she's a human. Huh? That's weird. Moving on. Okay. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees her again, and he's like, oh, that's spicy that you're here. Oh, that's interesting. Thank you for giving me the wrong name. Okay, bye. Still doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
He only knows and figures out that she is his mate whenever she's a fae person at the very end, whenever they're on that balcony. And then he's like, oh, she's my mate.
Right.
Very emotional, etc. So, okay. So that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about his dad, his daddy, just like warped in to the camp, saw mama on the stake, get ready to get her. And he's like, boom, you, me, now, let's go.
Yeah, wife.
Yes.
That's how it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so this is boom, it happened. And they were both fae people. All right, you had Lucien.
Mm-hmm.
And Elaine, they were in the same place. Yeah. Got nothing. Okay. And then she's all in danger. She's going to, you know, she walked right past him. Nothing. And then she got into the cauldron, came out the cauldron. All of a sudden, boom, you're my mate. When she was Fae.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. 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 Nesta, Cassian, same room, same thing. Okay.
Yeah.
But they don't have their moment until after she's Fae, mm-hmm. when, you know, in the last booky thing.
Right.
Because then they have close time at that point. And then he's like, dude, she's it. He just doesn't say anything. So that's all three of them. They all three have mate people.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them knew while they were human that they were mates. Okay.
Okay.
You guys, you with me?
And Aelin and...
I have some points to make, but yes, continue.
Okay, okay. So my thinking is mates, this is my conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
mates actually are not rare. The whole mating thing is not actually rare. The thing is that they're mated to humans and they either A, don't ever fucking meet them because they don't ever talk to humans, or they B, die before they can meet them. So they don't ever get to, you know, have that fully realized. So I think that mates are actually common and that they're just also mated to humans and they just don't know it, or they don't ever meet them because they die. And it's only because those three got turned into Fae and then boom, all of a sudden they're like, oh, hey, guess what? I smell you, or whatever.
Yeah, I would say there's points to maybe like the human element of like, there would be obviously a lot of potential for people that didn't get around much or weren't talking to people on different continents or different races or whatever, that like you would not be able to access that mating bond because you never met your mate ever. But like Lucien and Cassian both had like inclinations already of like, this is my mate already. Like not inclination, but like, you know, the way Cassian is twisting toward Nesta as he's like dying, and Lucien trying to stop what's happening with Elaine specifically. And the cloak afterwards and like stuff like that. I'm like,
the cloak afterwards, is, he's like, you're my mate. And then cloak. And then Nesta's like,
what happens after?
Nuh-uh.
Well, Nesta's like, she's nothing to you, buddy.
Right.
Nothing. Nice try.
Well, this is my conspiracy. This is the hill I'm dying on.
I'm not against it.
There was also thoughts that the girl's mom was Fey or part Fey.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why she named her kid Feyre?
Yeah, because Amarantha talks about how funny it is that she's like named that. But we don't know why the fuck, what does that mean? And actually there is one point, because there's a lot of different theories. We don't have to go into everything. But it was really interesting. On page 558 in this book, this is when they're by the Cedra. And Feyre says, the music had been lovely, strange but lovely, written at a time, Cassian had told me, when humans had not even walked the earth. He found the music puzzling, off-kilter, but I've been entranced. And I'm like, Feyre, what do you mean by that?
Well, isn't it a characteristic of Fey in general that they're, and I think that's said somewhere in one of the books we fucking read by Sarah Jermaine, that Fey are very sensitive to sound.
Well, then why does the Fae with her think it's puzzling and off-kilter? Who we know has an appreciation for music later on with his relationship with Nesta.
Is it an appreciation for music or is it an appreciation for Nesta?
I think you have to appreciate music to get to that point.
Or does he appreciate that she appreciates the music?
What if the performance of this ancient revered Fae symphony is like a song that Aelin had performed for like Sam or her like writing?
Don't hurt me.
Wasn't there sheet music or whatever that she got?
I wonder if that's the ancient Fae symphony. Maybe there's a connection between Feyre and Aelin.
You guys hate me that much?
I'm just saying.
It's fine. That was like such an emotional part of that story. Like, don't do me like that, man.
It would be very interesting. It would be very interesting.
I thought it was still weird and strange that, and confusing and irritating. Their whole half-cocked plan about, we're going to take the books, don't join them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go next to the cauldron, say some spooky words, and then it all of a sudden won't work. And it's going to be totally fine. Nobody's going to know. We're going to go in and get out. Don't let the books touch, even though they're weird, spooky books that talk and want to hang out with each other. Don't let them do that. And then she gets there and she's like, boop. Wow, now that I'm here, I know this isn't going to work. Damn, that sucks. You know what I should do, though? Put the book together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder.
I just, whenever I was listening to it, I was like, why are they doing this? This doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
This whole thing is just stupid. And I walked away from it thinking like, God, that is just one big sloppy plot point jumble, like just to get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't they have done this elsewhere and the king just come along? They could have easily set up a trap literally anywhere. Why did they have to go to Highburn for this? Why did they have to do this?
I think it was more like they didn't know if they could move the cauldron.
Yeah, so but I'm saying that there, they could have just said that instead of the spooky words being said next to the cauldron, they could have just, Sarah could have just wrote it so the spooky words just had to be said and the cauldron would have lost its power. Because it's not like it's going to work either way.
Well,
and didn't Amryn know that it wasn't going to work? So she knew, because they tried to do it again the second time later in the other book. Mm-hmm. And Amryn's like, yeah, I know it's not going to work. So we just kind of have to like jump in and it'll suck. So let's do that. Okay, thanks, bye. And then they're all like, oh, the dying, don't die, 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 don't die, die, don't die. Mm-hmm. That whole thing.
Yeah.
So if Amryn's the one that decoded it and then told her, don't put the book together, read these spooky words at the next to the cauldron and your problems will be solved. But, oh, by the way, I know it doesn't work. Does that mean Amryn set them up? Or at the very least, Amryn's kind of a dick.
Always has been.
Yeah.
Like, she's culpable.
And that's interesting. I think when we read the next book.
Gross negligence.
Goofy. I think when we read the next book, it'd be interesting to kind of read through, like, Amryn and Feyre's, like, conversation at that point. Because the book, we know the Book of Breathing is together in Crescent City Book 1. So we know that it exists together essentially from that point, this point forward, perhaps.
But how do we know that?
It's one of the books in the library thing. Jaceba, whatever we're going to say, where it's pronounced. It's one of the things on the shelves.
Boss book lady.
Mm-hmm. So the Book of Breathing is on there. So we know it's together because Bryce talks about it. Or not being together, but not specifying it being apart. So that'd be interesting. That'd be one of those like unanswered kind of questions that maybe we'll see about in the next book, I should say. We'll see if we get any answers on it or more clarification. But it's interesting. I mean, Amryn definitely has her own motivations, I guess. That's fair to say. A lot of the fucking inner circle do. What the fuck is more? Dude, is she?
I don't even think Sarah knows.
Because, bro, I was actually one of the unanswered questions that I pinned, dude. And 589, chapter 63 in the text. Liar, Jurian groaned. You were always such a liar, Morrigan. What do you mean, bro? What do you mean? Her power is truth and she's lying. What do you mean? She was always such a liar.
He's using secret codes so they know that he's actually not on the bad guy's side.
That sounds vague.
Well, I mean, if you want to get technical, this is all a work of fiction.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. But maybe we'll get more clarification on the inner court later, because more, what the fuck does that mean? What happened with Eris?
She's just, like, super good at, like, dropping truth bombs. Yeah.
I really think Eris might be gay.
Maybe.
And that's the secret that more knows that.
Gave her Lucien. He knows he's not.
Eris?
Oh. Listen, let me live my own little weird world. I'll take two fire boys, man. I'll fire it together.
Later on, I think, doesn't he say that, like, more knows the truth?
It's fine.
Or whatever, that she would have been fine or something like that. I can't even remember now what was said. I know it's not in anytime soon.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that's...
Maybe if Moore told the truth.
Yeah, maybe we'd fucking know. We'll find out about Moore one of these fucking days, dude. But yeah, I don't know. I think the Eris and Moore thing is a little bit more complicated than that, but I wouldn't be against it because we don't really have a lot of visibility for gay characters, except for like Emery and Moore's bisexuality. Moore. But that's very...
And then you got the one guy who's just like, look, I'll fuck anything.
See, but he's not like a main character. I need like a story character to be involved. I mean, I love him.
The main character.
Listen, once he stops being an absentee father, I will feel differently, perhaps. Do you guys have anyone?
Find out, though?
I don't think he knows yet.
Book? No, he doesn't know. In the last book, didn't he like just find out?
Because the truce with Lucien is too weak.
Hmm.
But do you guys have anyone that you identified with this section that, like, especially if it was someone different than last time you read it or anything like that?
I identified with Feyre's feminine rage at people not telling her the whole truth. Because fuck that shit.
Mm. Well, at least it doesn't matter later.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You don't.
When Reese, like, withholds the dangerous pregnancy information. That. I hate that. I hate that switch of, like, never do secrets, never do plot. They specify that so much time in this fucking book. Don't hide shit from me. Hide shit from her. And she's like, aw, Pookie. Girl, stand up. Get a backbone. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, that part is...
I had one small thing I didn't like. Was that she says the phrase, make me a weapon, a couple of times. And I don't like that. Because I don't want her to be used as a tool. She said that in response to being used as bait. And I do understand that don't use me as something that is small and weak and helpless that you have to to protect. Like, I get that. She wants to be powerful in and of her own right. And that's wonderful. But I don't like being called a weapon either, because that's also still a tool.
Sure.
Do you know what, Em? I almost feel like that's the difference between Rhys and Cassian, right? It's because Cassian, I think, is so much more of a beautiful character, because we can see later on, of course, not in this book, but, and I'm sorry if this is spoilers, but we see that he allows room for Nesta to sort her own shit out and is there as a support. You know, he takes a backseat to that and offers her tools, you know?
Mm.
And Rhys, I think, takes a more forward approach and almost shapes Feyre. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Cassian is support and Rhys is a leader in their relationships. And yeah. I'm not saying that either one is bad.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's why I think that part of Cassian's journey, I just love that so much, because he's there just to help her in the same way that Rhys is there to help Feyre, but the way that they do it is so different. And the message, I think, is that Feyre, you're broken. I can help fix you. And Nesta, you were never broken. You were okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's such yeah. a different.
Yeah. When you put it like that. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you're never broken. You just need, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Love, the Cassian journey was so beautiful. And
yeah. I can't wait to do that again.
It's not bad. It's just not as heartwarming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as the heartwarming thing. Yeah. I'd love Cassian. I'll tell you that much.
Mm.
It's just interesting.
I've had that.
Maybe I also identify with Feyre, because I also be changing my fucking mind all the time. She's like, don't lie to me, don't do this. And then he does, and she's like, oh, babe. And then at one point, too, they're talking about children, and like, and Feyre's like, I just want time with you and time to do that. Girl, no,
just
you don't.
Kidding.
You're going to be pregnant in like 2.5 minutes. Thank you very much.
Like, gross.
I don't know about that.
They're so rare. You have a bunch of them.
I will say, I identified with Rhys a lot. I think I did the first time I read this. Maybe both Feyre and Rhys in this conversation around page 422 in the Holy Text. Like, this, I think it's underrated how, I mean, obviously Nesta is portrayed as a little bit more vicious or a little bit more forward, I guess.
Right.
But Feyre does describe that her and Nesta are cut from the same cloth, two sides of the same coin a lot.
Right.
And I think there's elements of that. And I really think on this like page in this argument, is so telling of that side of Feyre that's similar to Nesta that everyone wants to forget about for no reason. And it also made me relate to Rhys a lot, just because she is right. She is reading him to filth. And it's honestly, it's reading me as a reader. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, Feyre. It's the part where she goes, perhaps I don't know what I want, but at least I don't hide what I am behind a mask. At least I let them see who I am, broken bits and all. Yes, it's to save your people. But what about the other masks, Rhys? What about letting your friends see your real face? But maybe it's easier not to. Because what if you did let someone in? And what if they saw everything and still walked away? Who could blame them? Who would want to bother with that sort of mess?
Yeah. She was extra spicy. And I was like, damn, that hurts.
That hurt me. I was like, that's like my vulnerability on the fucking page. What if they saw everything and still walked away? That's my fucking trauma. Sarah, you owe me therapy for pointing this line fucking out to me.
I'll send you the bill.
And just Feyre, who could blame them? Who would want to bother with that sort of mess? Dude.
That's mean.
Feyre and Nesta are fucking related, and I won't hear all of this Nesta slander without an honest critique of Feyre as well, okay?
Oh, no.
I'm not saying Nesta's perfect.
Case point done.
But Jesus fucking Christ, dude. Like, that is harsh. And he flinched. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Little cruel.
It cuts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, put the teeth away. Calm down.
Yeah.
Take several seats.
Okay. We're going to relax.
He's already grumpy. Leave him alone.
Well, I'm sure we'll get answers for a lot of this in, I mean, there's more ACOTAR books to come, and I'm excited to read through the next book, especially, or the next like main book, I guess I should say, and get to reread it in different eyes now, especially with all this information. I'm catching Throne of Glass reference, I'm catching all this shit. I'm like, Sarah, you can't hide from me, girl.
Yeah, I got you.
But
it's, I think, difficult whenever you're listening to it. Mm-hmm. Because I miss a lot of that stuff if they don't expressly say it.
I'm tabbing it up. I'm making it happen.
I can't put tabs.
That's fair.
Sometimes whenever I'm listening, I'm like, yep, I would put a tab here, but oh well.
That's why you read as you're doing it. Yep. That's why you get your book out while you're listening. It's okay. You know?
Ain't nobody
you don't need all the detail and all the little intricate. It'll all come together when Sarah wants. The real question is, who's bae of the day?
I think that's I know who it is.
Okay.
It's I mean, you guys know I like having the bae of the day be the person that pushed the plot line along the best.
Tamlin.
Gotta be the Suriel. Suriel's gotta be bae of the day. She's
mood.
The Suriel is literally the character that was like mate. And then made favor be like, I'm sorry, what?
Pardon?
Like, if that had not happened, I don't know that Reese would have got the balls to tell her. And then he absolutely would have made her, like, got her to make him food and not said anything.
I don't think so.
Oh, I think so. Especially since he's, well, like, sneaky later with the pregnancy stuffs. Oh yeah,
he is kind of sneaky.
That's a side of him that we see later.
Yeah, well, and we saw it a little bit in the first book when he like was touching her exposed bones in her arms to get her to like be in a deal with him.
Yeah,
not great, Reese. Good thing I'm colorblind, so red flags don't know her. But
he's a good, but he's not the good.
He's got a little darkness to him, ironically enough.
I don't mind.
Honestly, yeah. I'm into it. Reese, I'll
at least he doesn't sound like mayonnaise.
Oh my god. Well, the cereal is the cereal. Our of the day. Tea spilled.
I would
we
love
do have a cereal tea party thing, don't we?
Yeah, don't we have something listed on the Etsy page for the cereal? Your guys' favorite. Yeah.
Leon.
If you guys haven't seen that yet, of course, we've got all of our social media pages. First of all, you can see that on Etsy under Smutty Scriptures, right?
Yes. And we've got, I made a journal, bullet journal stuff.
Hell yeah.
All of the, I forget what they're.
Wow. What, like the book club stuff?
Words
or, like the planner pages and stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of shit on there. Yeah.
Why the word planner was difficult, I'm not sure. But I made like a whole planner set for like a whole year. And you can use it, you know, every single year forever. For the rest of your life, you can have the Night Court Bat Boys be there. And some of the most amazing quotes. And
yep. I printed out, actually, the planner. And I use it at work every day. And I actually just printed out the rest of the year.
Nice. Love that.
Yeah, I can't wait because I'm going to be marking down with my special pens and making all the dates and everything, planning out the rest of my year.
So I like it because I think you were the one who told me that I should read, you know, edit it to make sure that it was good for every single year. And I did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Buy it once and it's good forever.
Yes.
I like the Throne of Glass one, too. I like alternating between them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But
I'm going to make a Crescent City one.
Yeah, and you guys can always get Smutty Scriptures podcast merch itself as well. You match with me.
Course.
I've got my jacket. It's incredible. I want more. I want a beanie. I want so much.
I want it.
Make it happen for me, please. But all of that is easily accessible on the Smutty Scriptures Instagram. We also have a TikTok. I mean, you can pretty much find us just about anywhere. We also have a Patreon these days. We're posting some behind the scenes, some extra episodes, or at least early access to episodes and all that fun stuff as well. Of course, we want to thank you guys for listening. This has been Smutty Scriptures reading A Court of Mist and Fury. We will be getting into the next book rather shortly. Probably do another complete reread. And with that being said, Church is adjourned.
Men.
Cereal?
Winnowing out.
Thanks. I hate it.